And with our guest tonight, Keith Morgan, we're going to take your phone calls for Keith in just a second. He's got a website, and we've got it all linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment. And welcome back to Coast, Keith Morgan, our guest. A whole slate of calls here waiting for you, Keith. But let's talk about some of those predictions again, if we can. The 2012, you think there's going to be contact before then, or is that going to be a strike date for us?
No, I think it's going to lead up to that point. So by the time we get there, we'll be fully aware, interactive. So it's going to start somewhere. Disclosure is going to start leaking out big time between now and then.
I think you're right. Probably even sooner than later.
Yeah, I think so, too.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to our west of the Rockies line. First of all, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Rick.
Sir. Go ahead, Rick.
I'm a truck driver. I'm out here in Kansas. I had a question for George, you and your guest. Why doesn't somebody come up with a book on all these inventions as far as ways to heat things, you know, the coil you were talking about and the hydrogen. Why don't you guys put a team together or something to write a book on these things, the inventions, so that the public can get out there and learn, you know, how to do this on our own without having to wait for it to come to us?
That's not a bad idea, Keith. It's you know, something like inventions we don't know or something like that.
Yeah, well, I would like to put a team together to do something like that. Can you imagine having a car, you're driving down the road, starts raining, louvers open, and your car starts filling back up with fuel?
Yeah, exactly.
What's
and you go forever? I know it. Not bad at all. Eventually, this is going to happen. I just don't know when. I've got a debate coming up next week between Jerry Corsi, who believes that oil is within this planet, constantly being replenished, and Michael Rupert, who believes we're running out of it. And that's going to be an interesting debate. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yes, hello. My name is Mike. I'm calling from Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Hi, Mike. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that I think the government has perfected the Philadelphia experiment, because this is no joke, but about 14 years ago here, I happened to be out late one night and seen a bunch of heat lightning. It was blue in color. Next thing I know, I seen a real static charge over the bay at which I was located. It was like static electricity, a real high charge, and then all of a sudden a military aircraft, a helicopter, just appeared out of nowhere. And I can't figure that out.
Well, then, if it was a 1940 plane, then we really were into something. Any idea what kind of?
It was like a Huey helicopter, so just like an average, regular military aircraft. But for it to just appear out of nowhere like that, and it was like almost like a static charge, like you've seen Back to the Future, where the static electricity just came out of like a point, like a center point in the middle of the bay, and the lightning bolts just stretched outward to each side, and then it just it almost sounded like an echo sound, like a silent echo sound when the propellers, and then all of a sudden it was just like boom. Then you heard the whole actual sound, like you would hear like if one was over top of you, and then it just circled around and took off, and I just couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Did you do any work into that arena, Keith?
Believe this or not, I was in Bethesda, Maryland, and I was in a parking structure outside, and I heard these jets, and I looked up in the sky, and I thought this was a refueling going on, because it was a big jet, and then there were these smaller F-17s or some 16s or whatever flying with it, and then it looked like there was this vortex that was trailing behind the jet, so I thought it was refueling. But then it was like all these jets went into it and disappeared, and I was like, okay, forget that. I'm not thinking about that no more. But I saw something weird like that, and I just said, okay, maybe they went behind the clouds, and I left it alone. I was flying to Manchester not too long ago. It was last year, January, February, or something like that. I'm looking out the window at the clouds that are like, we're at 30,000 feet, clouds at like 20,000 feet, and this disc goes under the plane and out under the wing, and it's just sitting there above these clouds, thick clouds. And I've had weird things like that go on. I didn't have a camera to catch it or anything, but something's going on. Someone's trying to get our attention. The crop circles, the sightings over Mexico, you don't hover above one of the world's largest cities during a total solar eclipse unless you're trying to get somebody's attention, because you know everyone's going to be looking up in the middle of the day.
Did you ever do crop circles with Nightline?
No, no. But I talked to Colin Andrews, and one of the crop circles that showed up at the Bradbury Castle, actually, that crop circle had embedded in it everything about the circumscribed tetrahedral geometry. See, ancient alchemists knew this was the secret of the universe. And you can look this up in Space, Time, and Mind, or Time, Life, Mysteries series.
Mm-hmm.
Ancient alchemists said, if you make a square, you put a circle in the square so that the circle touches all four corners, sides of the square. You put a triangle inside the circle so that all three tips touch
the circle.
And then you put a square inside of the triangle so that all four corners of the triangle touch the triangle. Then you would have the secret of the universe. Well, we're looking at the circumscribed tetrahedral geometry in two dimensions. And I think the squares, the inner square and the outer square, represent the two dimensions between our three-dimensional world and the fourth-dimensional world. And that's what they're trying to tell us. And that's what Sidonia is trying to tell us, that there are other dimensions. And according to the math, there's at least 25 other dimensions out there. And one dimension folding into another one would yield a hexagonal pattern. And around the pole of Saturn, because Voyager went over the pole of Saturn, it took enough pictures to make an animation that shows a hexagonal cloud pattern around the pole of Saturn. The clouds are going in the opposite direction of the rotation of the planet at over 300 miles an hour. They go to the corners of the hexagonal, and they turn, and there's nothing in our physics that can explain it, but NASA does not talk about it. Now, Saturn doesn't have a spot on it, but in 1990, a spot started to form. And what latitude do you think it started to form at?
19.5.
So I call up the man who won the Angstrom Medal for Excellence in Science, and I said, so why is this happening? And he says, well, most likely all the moons have lined up on one side. So I go to a program I have called Dance of the Planets. I put in the date that this started, zoomed in on Saturn. All the moons except for one were lined up on one side of the planet. Now, you think that was a lucky guess?
No.
No. That is the hyperdimensional physics. The sun is not a fusion reactor. And if they had a camera on Ulysses as it was going over and under the pole, they would see there is some kind of hexagonal flame pattern around the pole of the sun. That would clinch it, that the hyperdimensional physics is real. The sun is just a big hyperdimensional shunt, shunting tons of energy across that bursts onto the scene as the heat and light we see. That's why they can't find the neutrinos streaming from this fusion reactor, because they're not changing on the way to the Earth. It's not a fusion reactor. And they're not going to accept that, because they have this dogmatic thinking. Oh, we exploded a hydrogen bomb. This must be the way the sun works. No, you're totally wrong. There is a way to tap into the energy of the atom without tearing atoms apart. Do you know that in popular science they had a thing about creating singularities, making little black holes by slamming two protons together and creating...
And they've been working on that.
Yeah, it's in popular science. I think it was last month or this month. Pick up a popular science. It's in there. Because they're saying, you know what this proves? They were trying to prove that there's other dimensions.
Well, there's no doubt. Are you a believer in time travel?
I'm not a believer. I think there's a possibility that, yes, time travel is possible. But, you know, I still have an open mind on that because all the facts aren't in.
All right.
Now, HARP. You know what HARP is?
Of course. And that's up to something. I think it's weather manipulation myself.
Well, you never heard this theory. In 1973, I told my electronics teacher in high school, I said, how come we don't send a signal through the magnetic flux around the wire instead of through the wire? He said, it's impossible, can't be done. Well, today, media fusion, 2.5 gigabytes a second through the magnetic flux, goes at the speed of light, goes through transformers, anything inductive. No outside energy can interfere with it, lightning, noise, nothing, no lost packets, no retransmissions. It just goes. How do they get the signal in there? Microwave lasers. What is HARP?
Oh, that's what it is.
It's a microwave laser.
You think that's what they're using it for?
Well, if you were in a war and all your satellites got destroyed, how do you communicate to the other side of the world?
You need something else.
Well, what's the big thing around the Earth, the magnetic field? If you can inject a signal in there, you can get it out on the other side of the world and nobody can interfere with it.
Oh, so that's an interesting theory. First-time caller line, you're on with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, this is Rick from Springfield.
Okay.
And excuse me.
Illinois, Massachusetts.
Oh, Massachusetts.
Okay. Go ahead, Rich.
Yes. On the 2012 date, fully aware of the ETs. I have some facts there on the 42 generations between Abraham and the mathematical fact on Abraham and Christ. There are 42 generations. So now we know how long a generation is, and it's to be added on to the 1967 war between Israel and the other countries surrounding him.
So you're saying add that, and then we get to what, the end times?
Yeah. We're going to take us to 2008 and a half years. Now you got a 3.5 year tribulation, and then another 3.5 year great tribulation, and that's when Satan embodies Antichrist that's been received.
Okay. All right. Well, let's save this for another show, Richard, because I don't think this is Keith's expertise. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
How you doing?
Good.
I'm Joe from Bellevue.
Hey, Joe. Go ahead.
I got a question here. It's, you know how other countries have pumped millions into private shots at the moon and into space. Has anybody ever thought of private people, companies, corporations going to Mars with all the, you know, with all the government controlling NASA?
Well, I would guess Richard Branson's probably thinking about that as he puts his Virgin's space company together. Privatization of Mars, Keith, what do you think?
Well, we're going to be a little bit further to go before we actually get there. But one of the things that Nostradamus did say is that the Earth's forces would give way to a new engine above the clouds. So we may get there riding on anti-gravity or something.
Would you go to Mars if it was available right now?
Oh, yeah.
Three-year trip back? There and back?
Three-year trip?
Yeah.
Man, I got to go a little faster than that. I think I've already been there, though. Most people say I have.
You might have been. You might have been.
One quick thing. The 2012 date, okay? One of the crop circles that had formed had looked like the orbits and the asteroid field. And it had the Venus, Mercury, Mars, and I think Jupiter was in it. But it didn't have the Earth in one of the orbits. I took that crop circle, and I took my program, Dance of the Planets, and I ran it forward in time until the planets lined up virtually where they were in the crop circle, first looking from the northern pole down into the solar system. It came out like December 21st, 2012. Then I flipped it over and did it from like the southern pole looking at the solar system. Ran it forward again, came out January 12th or something like that, 2012. And I was like, uh-oh. Now, who was smart enough to build something like that that would come up with the alignment of the planets from either side of where you're looking from the top or the bottom of the solar system that keeps coming out in 2012? What crop circle maker had that kind of intelligence to do that? Somebody's trying to tell us something.
I wish we knew what the message was.
Yeah.
I agree that there is some kind of communications underway, but they're doing it in code for some reason. They don't want to make it easy for us to figure out. That I can't understand. Why not just lay out the puzzle for us?
Well, look at it this way. If you went to another solar system and you came across a primitive society, how would you test their mentality?
Well, you know, I'm not sure I'd be direct with them because I'd be afraid that I'd scare the living daylights out of them. So
let's say you look like them and you could walk amongst them.
Okay.
How would you test to see where their mentality stood? If it was me, I would kind of do what's going on now. I would go in, make a crop circle in the middle of their fields. And of course, crop circles aren't being made by microwave lasers because the crop circles were reported before microwaves were ever discovered. I would make a crop circle, and I'd listen to them. They'd come out and say, well, that was created by the mowing devil. I'd say, okay, these people haven't got a lick of sense. I'm not going to deal with them. Then I'd come back maybe a few hundred years later, make some more crop circles. And if they come out and say, well, it's rampant hedgehogs, now it's plasma vortices, now it's signals from extraterrestrials, then I'll go, oh, wait a minute.
They're learning.
They're learning something. Then I'd come back and I'd make a little more complex, a little bit more complex. And as they got a little bit more sophisticated, and then, of course, you get the hoaxers who start doing stuff. But I would be putting my messages out there to the people who are paying attention and can do the math. Because, like I said, ancient alchemists used to incorporate into pictograms their knowledge about a certain subject. And if you were another alchemist, you could understand what they were saying. So once the hoaxers got to a point where they were pretty good at doing it, then I started making ice circles and say, okay, go out on the ice and do it. And if you break through the ice and drown, then, okay. But if you can follow me making ice circles, then you can't explain that. So I would be doing things like that until, and then I'd be hovering in the sky, letting people see me every so often. And then eventually
Would you be abducting them?
No, I wouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, but see, they are.
That's me. But that's me. But yeah. We've got more than one civilization that's built visiting this Earth. And
I don't believe, Keith, that they're all benevolent.
Well, no. I mean, you've got a multitude of personalities out there just as you do here. And it doesn't take, you know, a rocket scientist to know that some of them just don't really care about, you know, what's going on around them except for what they want to do.
Take a quick moment before we go to the break and come back with final phone calls to tell me some of the things you put on your website.
Okay.
What is that?
Some of the stuff I put on my website.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on my website is the Morgan Curve animation, which shows the curve and how I found it. It shows the angles and everything involved with it and the X and Y axis. Then I have the photographs that show the close-ups because NASA didn't know about the curve. So when they took pictures of Sidonia again, they took a picture of the pyramid or portion of it that had the first three mounds to start out the curve. And because they took the close-up, now we can see details of the mounds and that on the side of the pyramidal structure, there are these ridges that run down one to each one of the mounds. And on my site, one of the pictures doesn't really show the rest of the pyramid, but there's in the full strip, if you get that and zoom in on it, you can follow from the third mound this ridge that goes all the way up and connects to a ridge that goes around the middle of it. There's an impact crater that kind of disrupt that ridge, but it's almost like it's a tunnel. Each one of these are tunnels that goes to some kind of structure at the bottom.
Yeah, I saw that. That was pretty fascinating stuff. Hey, we'll be right back with Keith Morgan. We'll take final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And Monday I'll be back in the City of Angels, L.A. Be there for a long time, as a matter of fact. On our next Coast to Coast program, the numbers lady, Glynis McCants, joins us with some incredible stories on the number 8 and some other issues, giving us a recap of 2005 and what's in store for 2006. With numbers. So we'll be back in a moment with our guest, Keith Morgan, and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Keith, do you miss Ted Koppel?
Yeah, because Ted used to give me a ride to my car, And we talk about stuff. And sometimes Ted would go, okay, Keith, not tonight. I'll give you a ride. No talking.
Right.
Other nights he'd go, okay, Keith, tell me what's happening. What's the latest scoop?
That's funny. That's funny. There's talk that he's going to do his own little television production company with Discovery or History or something like that. Have you heard that?
I'm just hearing rumors. I don't know what the true story is because he would have told me, though.
Sure.
I wanted to say that there's a whole bunch of stuff I'd like to talk about, but...
Not enough time. Too many calls.
I know. A whole bunch of time goes by. Okay, let's take another call.
You got that right. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello.
Hi, John from Caldwell, Idaho.
Well, welcome to the program, John, and the platform is yours.
Well, thank you. First of all, I'd like to say thanks for giving knowledge to the public, to both of you guys. And secondly, I've been a big Zachariah Sitchin fan for several years now. I've just read everything through. I'm curious about what your speculation is, though, about when they do return. Are they going to be viewing us as a slave race like they used to, or do you think they're going to help us move into the future?
Good point. Good question, Keith.
Well, according to Inky, after the flood took place and his brother and Lil found the ark, if you want to call that, on the top of Mount Ararat and the humans alive, he said it must be destiny because when he found out the Cain's people had survived on the other side of the planet in wrath, he said, from now on, we will protect man. And he said, go forth, be fruitful, and multiply. And that, I think, they are just keeping an eye on us right now. And we're probably more of a social experiment to see how we survive with the multitude of melting pot that we live in. And I think that's what they're just watching, and they're waiting for us to advance to a point where we do learn what the message at Sidonia is, and we can say, okay, we now have learned this. We're ready for your next teaching. Come show us what's happening. I think that's what they're really doing right now. And I think it's going to probably be a point where we have to make that next step. The military can't come up with their next stealth plane that's going to be anti-gravity without saying, oh, yeah, the technology came from here. You know, Philip Corso told us the truth. American Computer Company told us the truth about where they got the technology from. And I think that we need to really stop and think about where we're going to end up, because technology is never going to stop because we don't know it all. And even they were in awe of the power of when the flood took place, when the entire continental ice shelf fell into the ocean, creating a tsunami big enough to encompass the entire planet. And that's what caused the flood. So I think they're looking out, looking after us and probably protecting us. And whatever that little war that took place with the orbs in the sky back in the 1800s or whatever, it was probably them protecting us from something else.
Well, I wonder why they're not protecting us now. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, hi. This is Ron from Rochester.
Hey, Ron.
Hi. It's a great. You're really shedding some interesting perspective on this, Keith. I really enjoy it. I've been a free energy researcher since 1991, and in fact, I presented Troy Reed's paper at the IECEC conference in Boston in 1991.
Cool.
So I've known him, and unfortunately, his devices and stuff really never made it. You realize he was funded to the tune of at least $2 million by Dennis Weaver, who's a distant cousin of his.
Oh, yeah, I met Dennis. Richard and I met him when we were out there in Oklahoma.
Right, right. And it's real interesting because Troy got all this stuff through dreams, and he's a tremendous mechanic. But in terms of electricity and electronics, he really didn't have it. And the person who really has it, I'm sure you know, is John Bedini, because he's learned how to use the magnetic forces and pulse them. And that's really what Troy should have done in his motor. He should have been able to pulse electromagnets to get past that dead space.
Yeah, well, he was doing that with coils in his smaller version of it.
Right.
Because the big version had mechanical repulsors to get past the first repulsion point.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to mention something about some of the publications, because one of the earlier callers said, well, where can we get information about this?
Mm-hmm.
And you probably know this as well, but Gene Manning wrote a wonderful book called The Coming Energy Revolution, The Search for Free Energy. And that book is out there. Donald Kelly wrote a book in 1987 called The Manual of Free Energy Devices. That's available. Explore Magazine publishes this stuff. George Weissman is someone who also does this.
The Hunt for Zero Point.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff out there. All somebody has to do today is Google on the Internet. There were a lot of energy conferences back a few years ago, but what is it? Extraordinary Sciences still does this. They used to have it with the International Tesla Society, which unfortunately folded. All those things are out there. And
I had an idea for a motionless induction generator. I was going to give this to Art's audience, but somehow I got cut off when I was a caller. So I'm going to give this to George's audience.
Great.
I had an idea for a motionless induction generator, and this was after I learned about the circumscribed tetrahedral geometry and everything. And I had a theory, why not just push the field rather than spinning armatures through it? Well, six guys working together beat me to the punch, but they proved my theory that it would work. And they came up with a 200% efficient device. Now they got a 500% efficient device. But that was only one part of why I wanted to do that. If you can make a motionless induction generator, you should be able to make a motionless homopolar generator. And homopolar electrical generation was discovered by Michael Faraday back in 1831 when he discovered induction. He discovered that you could get electricity straight from a magnet without using induction. If you put a disc conductor on it, on a disc magnet, and you spin it all as one unit, you'll get a current to flow from the center of the disc to the edge of the disc. And Dr. Bruce De Palma, MIT, he brother of Brian De Palma, the film producer.
Been on the program.
Yeah. He created the end machine.
Mm-hmm.
And he was getting at a tenth of a volt, 8,000 amps out, and at 2.7, he was getting 15,000 plus amps out of this thing, and it was doing some fantastic stuff. So my theory is that I should be able to create a motionless homopolar generator. Because I talked to Bruce before he went to New Zealand, and I said, Bruce, did you ever think of offsetting the motor and gearing this up so it would spin at a higher RPM? He said, no. And then in Brian O'Leary's book, Energy in the Void, he has a piece in there about Brian De Palma, Bruce De Palma, had refined his end machine down to a beryllium rod with two disc magnets at each end, offset motors, spins this thing up to 70,000 RPM, and getting tremendous current out of it. So I'm thinking, okay, if I can make a motionless homopolar generator to give me the current and a motionless induction generator to give me the voltage, I could combine these two things. I bet you I could run my house off of a 9-volt battery for a month.
A 9-volt battery. I love it.
That's using a small amount of energy to tap into a larger source. The theory about magnets don't hold water that they have right now. I think what's going on is there's a hyperdimensional physics going on where there is a current flowing in the magnet once the material aligns. But you can't get to it because it's not conductive. And when you put that conductor on and spin it, that current walks into that disc through skin effect of some type, and now you can tap into it. Now, if you can just force it or coerce it into the conductor without spinning it, you've got energy on demand. And if you can use a small amount of energy to get that big amount out, then you can have gobs of energy flowing all over the place.
You seem like you're more interested, and take this in a good way, in the alternative energy field than the extraterrestrial type of work you've been doing. Is that correct? That's my assumption.
Remember I said all this stuff is related?
Yes.
It all comes full circle, trust me. Okay, the technology is one part of it, and the extraterrestrials and all of that, they all come together because it's being able to look at the world from a different perspective, being able to see beyond what the dogma is for the current thinking, the string theory, all of the other theories that they have for the physics. When it comes down to the circumscribed tetrahedral geometry,
it blows that all away. But if you look at it in context with it, then you can really see what's really going on in the universe. And even Bruce De Palma had his, he called it his anti-gravity device. And that was based on something that one of the contactees from back in the 50s said he was told that their technology was based on two discs rotating in opposite directions. And Bruce De Palma had these two flywheels on the top of these rods. He'd turn them in opposite directions. This thing weighed like 600 pounds. And just turning them in a slow opposite directions, it would lose 6 pounds. He did experiments where he had flywheels in the end of these pipes, and he would have the pipes suspended from the ceiling. He would pull them apart and let them swing past each other, pendulum back and forth, until they eventually came to a stop. He'd turn on the flywheels, he'd let them pendulum again, and they would lock and synchronize together and swing unison. What was the field that they were generating? It wasn't magnetic.
Sounds like you've done some work into Edward Leeds skull and down there in Coral Castle.
Yeah, but hey, the man said we are all magnets. And
you've
if you read the
right.
books that he read,
oh, yeah.
you would know how to do it.
He's right. Let's take some final calls. We're almost out of time here, Keith.
Okay.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George. Hey, Keith. Just had a quick question. It's kind of stepping backwards into what
sure.
the topic is. But you were talking about hydrogen for cars and making it more efficient and everything. When you're talking about low wattage, are you talking about the field, like the coils usually put out like 45,000 volts? Is that close to what you're talking about wattage-wise?
You're talking about converting the water to hydrogen?
Well, yeah, yeah. I'm just asking how much wattage is necessary for you to create enough hydrogen for it to be efficient enough to use.
It doesn't take much.
It doesn't
according
take much?
To, yeah, according to Albert in Philadelphia, the guy that was doing this that I met, he says you just pass a low current through aluminum.
Aluminum, yeah, that's what you're saying.
And it breaks the bonds.
Right, right. And I'm just curious because I'm mechanically inclined. If this is feasible enough to do, I've done research on the internet and stuff, and it doesn't tell me what I want to know without paying, you know, a nominal fee. But is it something that's really, really easy?
Yeah. If we took 1/10 of the brain power that we use to come up with that atomic killing machine and put it towards coming up with alternative energy, we would have been off oil. We
yeah.
would be off of oil.
That's something we definitely need to do. I mean, we got the biodiesel out there. We're ready to use that. I mean, why can't we just turn that over and instead of using the petroleum and stuff like that and get out of Mideast? Like,
that's right.
Yeah.
Pump the water out of the ocean.
Yeah.
I had a lady say to me, well, what if we use up all the water in the ocean? And that's the kind of stuff you got to deal with.
Yeah,
I said,
well,
what did I tell you get when you burn hydrogen? You get water vapor. No carbon dioxide, no carbon monoxide, none of those pollutants. You get water vapor. What's water vapor? Clouds. Clouds rain back down, go back into the ocean. What's the harm in that? If we have to tank water across the ocean to other countries for fuel and drinking, whatever, if the tanker sinks or leaks, it's water. It's not going to hurt anything. So, and you've got environmentalists now talking about the fuel cell cars and the hydrogen dripping water out of the fuel cells all over the place. I'm like, come on. You get more evaporation when your neighbor waters the grass than you would have with all the cars dripping water all over the place. And there's more evaporation from the ocean. We're making excuses for why we will not step forward and take charge and put us on a system of clean energy that we can use to make this planet run efficiently. We wouldn't have problems with people stuck in coal mines because there would be no one to have to go into coal mines to dig out the coal. We're so smart. People say, well, we couldn't have come up with this. We didn't come up with this technology on our own. And other people go, well, that's just insulting because it says man's not that smart. Well, if man's so smart, how come we're not using the most abundant element in the universe as fuel? 2/3 of the ocean are that fuel.
He is smart. He just doesn't want to do it because he's making too much money doing something else. Final caller, or first-time caller, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Matt from Eureka, California.
Hey, Matt, go for it.
Yeah, as just heard a little bit ago how you were saying everything is all related and the tetrahedral geometry and everything is how it all fits in with nature and the universe and everything. I found this old book written in 1974 called Pyramid Power, and I remember it was mentioned on a show the other night, and it was talking about there's two types of geometry in nature, static and dynamic. Static geometry doesn't need pi 3.14 or phi 1.68 to determine its dimensions and volume elements. The cube is the most perfect and balanced form obtained from static geometry. The five platonic solids all relate to static geometry. The cube, tetrahedron, dodecahedron, I can't pronounce that.
Dodecahedron.
Icosahedron and octahedron, and they all relate to the five elements that we have, earth, air, ether, water, and fire. And the shape of the Great Pyramid implies static geometry, and these were measurements taken from the Great Pyramid. Now, the other one about dynamic geometry is it always needs pi 3.14 and pi 1.618, and the sphere is the most perfect and balanced form from dynamic geometry. Now, it says that the height is the square root of pi. The height of the Great Pyramid represents dynamic geometry. Now, it's saying that geometry is the only structure of space and that light is housed within this structure. The discrete resonance phenomena present in all of atomic physics appears to be a consequence of light waves acting on the geometry of space. This is all stuff that's kind of fitting in with the Sanskrit theory of, well, Maya. Everything's an illusion. The whole world's a big hologram. We're all holographic bodies, holographic universe. The geometry of the pyramid is showing how these, what is it, the, I think it was...
Well, let's get his reaction, Matt, because we've got 35 seconds left, and I'll let you listen on your radio. Go ahead, Keith, wrap it up.
I think he's in the right direction. The pyramids were built by the Anunnaki. They built those after the Great Flood, and they made observatories around the world so they could observe the heavens so that they wouldn't get caught off guard of this happening again. It's a long story, but the Sphinx was built to look out towards the celestial landing site where they landed their craft. The pyramids had a stone in it, in the sarcophagus. There were no mummies in there. The stone resonated, which generated energy, which gave off light from within the pyramid. And pyramid, according to, from what I understand, means fire from within. And they had crystals and sockets around it that helped it resonate or something like that. So I don't know what was going on. Either it was a lodestone that was shaped a certain way to sit in that resonant sarcophagus or what. But
all right, Keith, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being on the program, especially you and Richard C. Keith Morgan, he worked with Ted Koppel at ABC. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDessori, and Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norris. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.